Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, sponsored by Zwift, where fun is fast. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad, it's a special edition of the pod for a special stage of the race.
Stage 11, Strada Bianchi, Stage 11, Montalcino. First viewed, of course, in 2010, wasn't it, when Cadel Evans won in the World Championships jersey. So always spectacular. I can't wait.
Yeah, an epic stage to look forward to tomorrow. 35 kilometres of gravel sections on the Strada Bianchi in the hills of Tuscany. We've been looking forward to it for four weeks. Like you say, that 2010 stage, an absolute epic in so many ways. Pouring rain, gravel sections. We are used to seeing the white dust of the Strada Bianchi sort of engulf the riders. Instead, what we saw was mud splattered.
Yeah,
almost impossible to keep your bike upright. It was like a skating rink watching that race back.
Yeah, which lended itself to Cadel Evans, obviously, and his mountain biking background and the bike handling, and there was lots of crashes. With it being such a new thing to the race back then, obviously, there was a lot of teams that were unprepared, should I say, so there was a lot of punctures. So yeah, I think as it's become synonymous with the Giro now, and we've had quite a few stages, and of course we've had quite a few Strada Bianchi since then, so lots of riders are way more prepared for it. Lots of teams are way more prepared for it and bring the right material and setup. And so I still think it's going to be very spectacular.
Cadel won that stage in 2010. You finished 4 minutes, 30 seconds behind. You said on the pod earlier this week, you had a hunger knock, a real...
I had a puncture and then a hunger flat. And I lost a lot that time in the last couple of kilometres. It just shows you the severity.
What was it like catching up with Cadel about the race today?
You know, it was really nice, actually. Cadel's a lovely guy and... we very rarely used to speak that much, actually, in the peloton. We used to just have the odd brief chat.
Because he was a real rival of yours, wasn't he?
And yeah, so I think your relationship... He was in 2011. He was obviously tour winner. I crashed out that tour and felt I had a good chance to win it. And then going into 2012, you know, ashamedly, I've said it last year on the podcast, he was... I fixated on him and I became obsessed with him in a not a very nice way, actually, in my head. And it was no reflection on him as a person. It was just more like a boxer, you know, going into a fight. And I knew, you know, I wanted to replicate. I watched him win the tour and was, you know, in admiration of winning that tour, sat at home with a broken collarbone. And in some ways, it was a contradiction. It was very inspirational watching him do that and realized that, you know, if Cadel can do it, because I always looked at the likes of Contador and Schlecks and that as these phenomenal athletes. Whereas Cadel was coming from a mountain bike background and me coming from a track background, was just a supreme talent at what he did and was able to transfer that to the road and win the Tour de France. He was the first Australian winner of the Tour. He won it towards the end of the race. I remember watching him after the time trial when he took the jersey in Grenoble with a day to go, and just the satisfaction that he'd won the Tour. And that joy of how much it meant to him and watching him win that is what stuck with me all winter. And, you know, Lance Armstrong said something very interesting on an ESPN documentary this winter that I watched several times, that Jan Ulrich got him out of bed every morning. And Cadel was like that for me. Every time I went out, you know, he got me out of bed in the morning. And I remember getting to the Dauphiné Libéré. I had the jersey after stage two, I think it was, and he started two minutes ahead of me in the time trial that I won. And I remember I nearly caught him that day. And all I thought about the whole time was going after Cadel. And at the Tour de France as well, I think when I had the jersey, he was second.
Jordan-esque, it became personal for me.
It did, yeah, sadly. And, you know, I say that sitting here today, sadly, because life's not supposed to be like that. You know, this obsession, this unhealthy obsession, really, consumed me that Cadel was the person to beat. As it worked out, he wasn't the person to beat. It was my own teammate, Chris Froome, by the time we got there. But it just shows you how, you know, you have to fixate on someone. And I fixated in my head on Cadel. And that was probably because I admired him so much. But it became a love-hate thing.
All right, I know you were excited about talking to Cadel. We're really excited to hear this interview. Here it is now, Sir Bradley Wiggins with Cadel Evans.
Sir Cadel Evans.
Thank you for joining me, Cadel. You're a star.
How are you going?
I was going to talk to you a bit this year. Obviously, the Giro d'Italia. Have you been keeping up with it? Have you been watching it?
Oh, a little bit. I follow the racing from afar. It's and the Giro always. Some interesting names coming out, and I'm actually probably going to go and visit a stage or two now that they've opened up the borders and we can go and visit.
Yeah, of course. This year the big talk is stage 11 and the gravel stage. We both raced on a similar stage in 2010. Yeah, you know, amazingly, 11 years ago now, wasn't it? Stage 7 to Montalcino, which you won the World Champs jersey. What are your memories of that day?
I remember it was wet.
Yeah, it was very wet.
As we all remember. No, most of all, it was one of my personal level, favourite victories of my career because it was such a dramatic day and a dramatic stage. But it was a stage that I'd really focused on and prepared quite well for and done a lot of work behind the scenes. Tire choice, wheel choice, bike choice, course reconnaissance, even reconnaissance the finish line and everything. I was really quite well prepared for it. So when I woke up and it was pouring rain, I was sort of rubbing my hands together, so this could be good. It really, for me on a personal level, I remember it well because, well, I've been asked a lot about it. It was a very watched stage, but also it really was a test of everything that I'd had from my career. Of course, we all come to the sport through different pathways. I came from mountain bike, so to be there in the mud and the rain and being covered in mud, I was really in my element. So that day, I was actually enjoying it. I was probably the only one on the whole Giro d'Italia group that day that was.
Yeah, you said about you'd put quite a bit of effort in behind the scenes. Do you think that there'll be much different now in terms of tyre choices and that? Or do you think that was obviously a new stage then back then, and it's been quite a it's become quite kind of prominent now in these sort of Giro d'Italia. And do you think much would have changed in terms of equipment choice for this year's race?
I think now that we've had so many in Grand Tours, more stages with dirt roads, but also the Strada Bianca has become such a big race and such a watched race. And there's also been a whole development of equipment around that. The riders and the teams are much more experienced in that regard. We were probably going in delving into the unknown in 2010 when we were racing there, but also the development of equipment has come so far, and the whole discipline of gravel cycling and so on has been so much development in equipment, tyres, the tubeless technology, disc brakes, and all these things make the bike so much more adapted at those stages. But having said that, and as you well know, we who race for the 3-week overall, we have so much to lose on those days, whether it's a cobbled stage in the Tour de France or a gravel stage in the Giro. You put everything, you prepare everything for that 3-week race, but you make a mistake on that day and everything goes out the window. Mm. So you also have to be very cautious, as you well know, and anyone who, even if they're not looking to take time, they certainly don't want to be losing time, as everyone knows, for a three-week race. It's sometimes not making time, but not losing it.
Yeah, amazingly, next year, I think it's 20 years next year since you held the pink jersey for the first time with Mapai in 2002. What are your memories going back to that day?
It was funny. I went and unhooked it. I've got it framed on the wall. It's one of my few jerseys I've got hang up on the wall, actually. I want to hang it up in the background here. It's it's become, I suppose, Map A team, and everything's become such a bit of a legend in cycling now. But of course, for me, I was a neo professional in my first Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20 years next year. Thanks for reminding me.
That's all right.
I went into that race as a bit of the secret hope for Mapei. I was alongside Stefano Garzelli, who's probably working in the studio close to you are, and that was just being in the Giro that year with Garzo was already a bit of a drama in itself, other than the fact that the Giro is always a drama. But going there as a near professional with the Mapei as a team, it was in Italy, and your team leader who was in the pink jersey is no longer in the race, and you're sitting third, second on GC, and then you ride. I rode into the pink jersey on the second last day in the mountains, I think, as a near professional, never having done a 3-week race in my life. And long story, I lost a lot of time on the very last stage to the mountain, but it was, an incredible experience.
It was quite an Italian race then, wasn't it? It's not as international as it is now, was it?
It's really, the Giro, for its own merits, has become such a, of course, the Tour is still the most worldwide watched race, but the Giro is really, it's about the passionate cycling fans. And I don't know for you, but for me as a rider, I love racing the Giro because it is so dramatic and all these, the little roads and the difficult conditions. But back then it was really, it was about the Italian teams focusing on that. And as an international rider, it was why wasn't I running the Tour de France was the question I would keep, say, from Australia. But as a to be given the leadership of a team like Mapei as a neo-pro was almost unheard of in that era. Mm. And at the Giro d'Italia, to be given the leadership of the Tour de France for the Mapei, that it wasn't such a big deal, to be honest. They sent their best team to the Giro. So it was a bit of a strange, but things have changed and the Giro's become more and more international, more and more watched, and that's great for the Giro and great for cycling.
Yeah, 2013, obviously I was trying to win the race that year, and Vincenzo Nibali was on another level that year for me. But of course, I remember by the time I was back home watching you, of course, on Cecchimi di Lavaredo in the snow. That was quite an epic day, and it's become quite sort of synonymous with the Giro, isn't it, those epic days?
Yeah, what I found with the Giro, and just watching Ahmed Quickstep the other day, I think he had suffering with the feeding and so on in the cold and the conditions. And with the Giro, often, not so much this year, but in past years where you start in the south, you're in quite warm weather, and then you come into the north and you go into the mountains, and it's such a shock to your thermoregulation system that the cold weather, it's not, well, sometimes it's snowing and it's really cold, but you just get knocked around by this really varied conditions, and then plus the roads, the Strada Bianca, the white roads of Tuscany or the mountains. But even as you know, I think we had one stage there. I remember coming into Tuscany, coming into Firenze, where you may have crashed in 2013.
Yes, correct.
Might have been the day. And but what happened, I can't even remember the name of that. There was all these trees flowering at the time, and I remember them because I had a bit of an allergy to them. One thing, these flowers had so much oil on them, and they all hang over the roads and fall on the roads, and all this oil accumulates on the road, and it made the road so slippery. It was incredible. And I think we were riding the same brand of wheels that year, actually, and I remember we were having a little bit of problems with the brake surfaces and the braking in the wet there. I remember very well, actually, but these are just the conditions that you have to get used to, and that's where I think it makes the Giro so much more dramatic, because there is so much for things you just don't expect. These things just happen: road closures, landslides, course changes, snow, hail. All these things just happen that make it really quite unpredictable and dramatic.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists. This is bicycle insurance made for everyone, from Grand Tour winners to cyclists hitting the pedals for the first time. Lacquer has transformed traditional insurance with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month, meaning you could pay nothing if nobody claims. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Claims are handled by Lacquer's team of cycling experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. The Bradley Wiggins Show listeners can get their first 30 days free. Head over to www.lacquer.co and sign up using the code Wiggins.
I mean, you raced through an era. Your career spanned so many years, and you raced with some pretty big names in the sport, from Lance Armstrong, Ulrich Pantani, Gazzelli, the Schleck brothers, Contador. You know, looking back now, who did you fear the most, or who was you most impressed by when, you know, Jan Ulrich? I mean, for me, I can remember racing with Pantani in the 2003 Giro, and they were all my heroes. And, you know, you sort of spanned a similar generation. And when you look back now, it's... I think I realise more than ever now just what an honour it was to race with yourself and so many other guys. What about you? Who did you sort of, when you look back now, because you've kind of fear the most in terms of rivals?
Yeah, I certainly, I'm the same now that years later you look back and you appreciate the guys you're with and the champions you're with, and some of them unfortunately aren't even alive today. I had all these fantastic teammates in guys like Bettini and Gazzelli and... I was on a team with all the way through to George Hincapie, Oscar Freire in my early days at Mapei, and I had all these fantastic teammates. But growing up, I was really Miguel Indurain's first Tour de France in 1991 was the first one I watched, and he was always for me the ultimate in cycling. To finally meet him at GP Indurain many years later as a rider was an honour, and he really is admired on the bike and off the bike. On the bike, he just seems so unbeatable in his time. And off the bike, he's such a gentle giant. Then racing, well, I always found myself head-to-head against Contador.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, strong in the mountains. He could do some incredibly good time trials. But mentally, he was a he was a tough nut to crack. If you go back and you look at the situation he was in the 2010 Tour de France when he was on the same team as Armstrong, and I remember seeing him on the stage to the Verbier. I'm speaking about the tour here, but he was going back and getting his own bottles as a team leader for the Tour de France, which he won the stage of, and he won that tour. And later might have been corrected, but anyway. But just to see this, like mentally to deal with this is just like who could deal with this? But I think Contador for me was the hardest one. When it was one-on-one with him, it was like I had absolutely everything going just right for me. And
I mean, it's 11 years now since you won the tour. Is it 10 years, isn't it? 10 years, 2011 10 years you won the tour.
That's correct,
It's time flies, doesn't it? And do you think now you see the guys like Jai Hindley and that, I mean, they look back to you and you were like catalyst for this resurgence in Australian cycling. I mean, of course, you would have looked up to the likes of Phil Anderson and that, but obviously Jai Hindley and these guys now, they're second in the Giro last year. I mean, what do you make of the current crop of Australians?
I hope that I was a bit of an inspiration or a bit of a paved the way a bit, but I see the same way. I see the country sort of go through eras, and whether it was Holland in the 80s or 90s, and then Lance came and really opened the door to the English-speaking world, but also to American cycling, and then I hope that I sort of enlightened the Australian public in cycling and outside of cycling to the beauty of our sport, and like you did with the English population, the huge following that you moved from 2012 particularly onwards was the way I see it. And now we've got Jai Hindley, obviously came in, had a great result last year, coming second. I think last year's Giro was also with the whole, all of us were in unprecedented times with the whole pandemic situation. So in some ways, maybe that was, I think that played into some of the young riders' hands better, I think, that they were going into the unknown anyway, whereas the older riders, I think us as older, more experienced riders, we're a bit more stuck in our way and we know what boxes we have to tick to be satisfied and confident to be ready. But then this year, unfortunately, Jai, things haven't been going well for him. But I see, we have a couple of guys coming through a little bit later. But as you know, it takes many years to come through. We've always been a nation of sprinters. But we've got one or two still coming through. And, time will tell.
Lastly, Cadell, I'll just ask you what you're up to these days. You still getting out on the bike?
Yes, I still ride, still exercise, and of course, apart from these travel restrictions, and still involved with BMC, the company, and keeping on the bike for that reason. But with no public events going on, that's been very quiet. But I still ride. I was out on my gravel bike yesterday. I'm still based in Switzerland, and ride, enjoy sport, enjoy life, have two young kids, and of course I have my own race when this world opens up again, the Great Ocean Road Race in January in Australia.
Well, Cadell, it's been an absolute honour speaking to you again. Thank you very much for joining us.
Brad, thank you very much for having me.
Look after yourself.
You too. Look after yourself. Thanks very much, mate. See you.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.